I like documentaries. Like I love watching, like, you know, stuff that's like factual based sort of thing. It's not my go-to, but like it's something that I really do enjoy doing. Are you a documentary person?
Yeah, I'm a documentary person. Like I've watched I've always been into documentaries, even when like in my fucking shitlord atheist days when I was a teenager. Like, remember watching Religulous and like loving it with Bill Maher, and just sort of like the way that you're able to construct sort of like a narrative and sort of talk about things factually to a pretty good degree. But there's been loads that I've really enjoyed over the last year. Like there's a great one on the Mafia that was on Netflix. That was like three-parter. That was really good. The one about what's his name? Not Jeffrey Dahmer, but the other fucking crazy one with the Zac Efron movie. And
Ted Bundy.
Yeah, the Ted Bundy documentary was excellent. That was really good. And like, I think they've done a good job of the Richard Ramirez ones. But like, I was in a fucking death metal band for like a number of years, so I know the stories of all of these guys. I really need to go in and watch a documentary about it. I've even fucking got comic books for a few of them. It's just, you know, but apparently that's a good one as well, from what I've heard, The Night Stalker.
I remember like there was time period where like a documentary came out like every month from like Netflix on like some random issue, like how milk is bad or like how meat is causing the entire, like, how meat is causing all of the industrial pollution and some shit. And, like, it's all stuff that can be, like, easily disproven. But, like, they're presented, like, documentaries in official form. And, I mean, that's actually where the name Very Important Documentaries came from, is making fun of that. Like
Netflix is just like making bread tube videos for
they
us.
They were. They're basically doing that. Like, because they don't have, like, they would just like have like a single statistic that they would distort. And then like the person making the documentary would go on a fucking like journey learning about it. And like the lesson would be, I traveled the world in my, you know, definitely not private jet or anything. And you could stop the pollution by not eating meat.
There's the personality-driven celebrity documentaries, like the Zac Efron one that came out, where he's just like going around Europe being like, whoa, man, how cool is this?
That shit is so
funny.
Yeah, we
talked about that on an episode before. That was so ridiculous. Like, it was just, it's kind of hard to, it was like watching a Darman sketch, but it's like a guy that you saw on the Disney Channel and like in popular movies. You're just like, how are you this dumb? Like, I don't know. It's like, you see kind of like some of those celebrities that are like impossibly good looking and whatever, like fucking Brad Pitt or whatever. Like, they've got to be like some sort of like fucking dumbass. You hear they're very intelligent people, but then Zac Efron, you're like, yeah, he's probably a smart guy. No. No. He's hook, line, and sinker for the most new age dumb fucking shit ever.
He's like, science, man. How cool is that? It's like so cringe. And then also the Free Britney documentary just came out.
I haven't watched
so
it yet.
I'm not interested at all. But the thing that I'm happy is that all the leftoids, like philanthropic save someone energy, is now totally being concentrated like over there right now. They're really preoccupied with it. So
are they
like,
really?
They are. All the leftoids and like K-pop fans are like really like preoccupied with like Britney Spears and like saving her from like the oppressive like hetero patriarchy or whatever. So like, I'm glad that they've got something to do.
We had one of the best documentaries of all time last year as well with the Tiger King. Like, my God. Has a documentary ever fucking been talked about as much as that series? I don't think.
I think that was probably the biggest like phenomenon in terms of documentary.
It just captivated. I'm so looking forward to the fucking Nicolas Cage movie about Joe Exotic and that whole fucking story. Like, yeah, that's 100% happening. And like, that is going to be a fucking gem, like an absolute gem. But it's pretty rare for like a fucking documentary to have a kind of story that really captivates people in that kind of way. I guess that was pretty one-off, where you're kind of really going into some pretty unique circumstances, to say the least. But it would be cool. I think there's a great one actually on DB Cooper that just came out on HBO Max as well. It's supposed to be very good. That's a really great like mystery as well that I've been I've watched many documentaries about.
Everyone has their poison, though, in terms of their documentary genres that they like.
I like My 600-Pound Life, the best series of documentaries.
So that yours is just like reality trash, basically, and some political
bariatric
stuff.
Bariatric surgery.
No, I saw me and Jake saw a clip of it or whatever, and I was just like, this is human. This is like there's just something like pornographic about it. I was just like, this is a human zoo. I can't handle it. But I like history documentaries a lot. That's my main sort of thing when it comes to documentaries. Like, I love to sip tea on, like, you know, the court of King Henry VIII, or like, you know, what was happening in like the Heian court in Japan or whatever. Like, I love that kind of thing because it's got full of drama and tea. Jake, you like any mob stuff that has to do with the mob? Aliens. He's nodding ferociously right now.
I have a wide selection of genres that I like. Documentaries,
true crime.
Street food documentaries on Netflix are great, where they're showing you all these cute little spots that have been passed down for 50 years or whatever. They're really sweet. The true crime ones are cool to an extent. Some of them are all right. Some of them are a little
I've watched so many of them, though. They made like all crime blur together. That's not good.
Yeah, I don't like, I don't have anything against true crime as a genre, but the stands are what like bug me, because they're the type, the people who are really, really into true crime are the type that like have like the DSM in their house and like diagnose everyone as like a narcissist. And
so you're
like
a sociopath.
Yeah, literally. They're like they're hyper vigilant and like there's almost like a psychosexual like titillation that they get from the idea of being like murder burgled, basically. Like, I don't think it's healthy. I really don't think it's healthy.
I know. I totally agree.
I think YouTube documentaries are sometimes underrated as well. Like this, fuck that guy.
That's what comes to mind when you say YouTube documentary, like Shane Dawson being like, "Is the Illuminati real?" It's like literally what comes to mind.
No, fuck that. Fuck Shane Dawson. But like I mentioned it on the Low Res episode. Actually, there's a channel on YouTube, OKI Stories, that has done a number of like ones cut up into sections and some sort of longer ones as well, but various just fascinating instances have happened. Like, he did the John McAfee one, he did the gay frogs one, and then it's always followed with like an interview of the people that he's doing this documentary about as well, which is what I find that fucking brilliant as well. And like, give that kid credit, he looks young as fuck. Like, he looks younger than us, and he's been able to speak to John McAfee, like, and he did such a great job of his fucking story as well. So I mean, like, credit where credit's due to some of the YouTube documentary makers as well out there
that aren't Shane Dawson or Tati or whatever, I don't know, makeup guru bullshit.
And I mean, alien ones, there are very few good alien documentaries, if I'm completely honest. I think, like, I'm trying to think off the top of my head if there are any actual documentaries that I've watched that have been really compelling like that. No, because even like, as much as I like Jeremy Corbell, like, and fucking the people that he's been able to bring on to Rogan's podcast and talk about those things, I find those conversations and those podcasts like far more information, reliable and fucking just everything else, and fascinating and just interesting.
You know, I agree. Podcasts are way better for information. Speaking of, welcome to Low Society.
Welcome.
I'm Peter. Angie speaks.
Hello.
And Jake here with me as per usual.
Hello.
The whole crew is here. It's just us. So we will be getting to the parasocial patron stuff in this episode. It's been a few weeks where we've had guests. We got to apologize to everybody for that up front. But follow us wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple Music, Spotify, or now Audible. Also, if they let you leave reviews, leave us a 5-star review, none of the 4-star bullshit. That applies to Audible as much as it does to Apple Music now. So keep that in mind for all the Amazon people, the people who are like, Apple's for stuffy folks. tell your friends.
Yeah.
If you like the podcast, you think they might be interested in something anti-establishment. Also, if you are particularly interested in supporting us, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/lowsocietypod. From the $2 tier up, we have a Discord, which is a community of great people. $5 gets you bonus episodes every week. We just finished recording this one. It It went in some directions, let's say.
Sexist directions.
Yes, it got a little sexist. $5 a month gets you all the sexism you could possibly want.
Yes. So yeah, feel free to support us, and thank you for those of you who do.
The big one, like we said, though, the parasocial patrons is at $25, you get to send in audio to us. We'll play it on the show. We really appreciate all of the help, everybody, and I think we've gotten through our bullshit for the day.
Well, speaking of documentaries, Adam Curtis blessed us with a six-parter called Get Out of My Head, which me and Jake rinsed like over the weekend, just like totally like sat there and doomed together as all couples, as all real, I'm joking. It was really fun to watch, and I learned a lot from it, and it was heavy at points as well. But it had a lot to say, but we highly recommend watching it if you've got the time, though, because it's like the amount of time it would take to fly from London to New York, basically.
it's a six-parter, and every part is at least like an hour and like 10 minutes, I want to say, is the shortest of all of them.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of his style and cadence as well. Like, I really like the way that he makes documentaries, the way that he uses images, the images that he chooses. So it was quite a visually compelling experience, as well as like a full of like, you know, decent information. But yeah, it was really like heavy watch that covered basically every sort of the entire sort of political zeitgeist within the end of the 20th century leading into the 21st century, and sort of acted to historicize the moment that we're currently in, which is the place in which I found the documentary the most valuable, because obviously we live in like this like postmodern dystopia where like we're totally deterritorialized and nobody really has a sense of history or continuity. And I think it was really important that he kind of historicized the current moment. And I really give props to people who do the work of like historicizing, because, you know, it's so easy for us to forget the past and how the past brings us to the present. And that was one of the aspects that I really enjoyed.
An excellent use of Aphex Twin throughout the soundtrack.
Yes, I agree. And,
yes, absolutely.
We have any budding documentary makers listening to this, but you can't afford quite, you know, to license an Aphex Twin track. There might be like some producer that you could get hold of, maybe that hosts this podcast, and they might be able to sort you out. So just, you know, hit me up.
Loads of people, whenever they watch my videos, they're like, is that like an Aphex Twin song? Is that Boards of Canada? And I'm like, don't stroke Jake's ego too much. I have to live with him. No, it's
Jake one day scoring the next Adam Curtis series.
Seriously. I would be so proud of you if that
That'd
happened.
Be badass.
Oh, it would be awesome. I would love to talk to him, because I feel like he sort of, his use of music is excellent in it, and it sort of really touches upon the sort of emotions and feelings that you get when you are listening to sort of stuff like Aphex Twin, that sort of deep contemplative stuff, and being able to sort of not just space out to that, but then have loads of really like interesting and compelling information sort of detailed to you. It sort of really gets your head in the right space, I think. If you'd gone with like an orchestral or something fairly standard, it would sort of it wouldn't work as well. It wouldn't hit your subconscious quite as hard, I think. And it definitely harkens back to those old like BBC 1980s documentaries
absolutely.
In such a fantastic way. So
aesthetically, they're really good.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got a fucking vibe. It has a vibe for sure. But I guess we'll start at the beginning. So the historicizing aspect of it is something that I found very valuable. But the key sort of things that I took away from the documentary series was, number one, he sort of excavated the failures of radical movements in the 20th and 21st century, which I thought was very important. He also spent time kind of, you know, sorry. He also spent time really showing us the sort of genesis of neoliberalism and how it sort of pushed all these ideologies to the fringes. But I know he himself does not use the term neoliberalism.
No,
I think he's, and I understand his reasons why, but I don't think he uses the term neoliberalism. But I guess from a perspective of trying to sort of describe the phenomena he was describing, he sort of shows us the genesis of neoliberalism and the role neoliberalism played in sort of keeping back the horrors of the 20th century, basically. And he also outlined as well, which I found really interesting, how the current moment has a lot of different challenges that we're not going to be able to solve with old solutions. And also highlighted the importance of imagining new futures and new possibilities. And yeah, it was an incredibly humbling experience for me personally to watch the documentary, because a lot of utopianism goes on, especially with people who are like on the left, quote unquote, or who claim to be on the left, or, you know, the people who got behind the Bernie movement, the people who got behind the Corbyn movement. You know, there's a lot of utopianism that's sold. And crushing defeats and crushing disappointments. And you sort of see that present within the movements that he was excavating, from China mm-hmm. to Russia to the Black Panthers. He sort of, you know, looked at a lot of different radical historical movements and saw how the utopian vision culminated into this crushing disappointment, and how the crushing disappointment was kind of fed on by neoliberalism in order to kind of justify yes. itself. And the thing I found humbling about it was the fact that in this new age where, you know, Bernieism was defeated, Corbynism was defeated, I have a problem with selling people any kind of utopian vision. I feel like the message of the documentary is that people need to stop, re-strategize, think, and reevaluate the current context that we're in, honestly, rather than just selling, you know, utopian visions to, even though it's profitable to do so, to working class people that are eventually going to demoralize and disappoint and push us further down the trajectory of nihilism and despair.
I think his evasion of the term neoliberalism is pretty perfect, to be honest, because the way he kind of depicts it as a shift from, you know, into individualism is so, like, not really... I don't know, it's hard to kind of explain that. I feel like when you start to just go, this is what neoliberalism is, blah, 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 yeah, blah. Whereas exactly. if you go, we yeah. used to kind of have a bit of like a, we're something together in this, together through mm-hmm. world wars, through whatever, and through time, this has kind of been, you're just you. You are only you, and you're responsible for you and making you happy. And that kind of, and how that feeds into the political and like the decisions that people make around their lives and things like that. And the attitudes towards things like, well, I can't remember her name now, that the trans woman in yeah. the 80s.
Yeah.
And sort of, and that wasn't like, I felt like talking badly about, you know, trans people in any way at all, but it was really talking about, and the sort of things that you don't really think about when you're so focused on the individual.
Well, I think it was more, in that specific instance, I think he brought it out as an example of the individual act self-actualization devoid of any sort of systemic checkpoints. Obviously sometimes those systemic checkpoints can be oppressive, but it's the idea that if you're individual in that sense, then you have to be individually responsible. And that was sort of the catch 22 of that situation that he showed. But I don't fault him for not using the terminology in any way, because it's obvious the phenomenon that he's depicting. But the most kind of important part of it for me was that he basically excavated the reason why radical movements fail, and he sort of brought it to a sort of stark realization in the documentary. And he sort of made the point about power, how that it stops being focused on justice and starts to become intensely focused on power, and how this sort of acts as a derailment of an original kind of populist ethos, which I found really, really interesting and also incredibly, incredibly humbling.
Well, then, and it also, like, the other part is, and I think this is a salient criticism, but it's more made through implication, is that sort of obsession with power is, again, individualized heavily. The figures that he talks about throughout it, like Mao's wife and all of those people, they're very obsessed with, like, gathering power as an individual, as opposed to as a political movement. The political movement is, for all intents and purposes, like a tool for them as opposed to an actual like real political movement. Like these leaders were utilizing these political movements, like Michael X, for instance, is brought up a lot in this documentary as well. You know, they're not leading necessarily. They're more using, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I think the issue is that the goal is power itself, not necessarily justice. And I think that that was sort of, and I don't, and it wasn't just Michael X and Mao's wife, Mao himself, Tupac Shakur is someone who he uses as an example in this as well. Basically, all the figures that he used as examples to portray these radical movements were people who were sort of interested in the idea of power, and justice kind of became put on the back burner, and power seeking took primacy over, you know, the pursuit of justice, and that ended up derailing and demoralizing people for another 100 years in the future. That's what happens, which is the reason why I am. And the whole thing is a nail in the coffin for the idea of radical politics, in my opinion, because it's dead. The Bernie campaign literally funneled all of that energy that people put together and fought hard for back into the DNC. And that kind of demoralizing of working people, selling them a utopian vision, and then disappointing them in that way is not something that I want to be a fucking part of. And I feel like it takes a certain amount of humility to say, you know what, I don't know what the future is going to look like. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's going to be called. But I know that there's a problem right now, and we need to put heads together to fix it as best as we can. And I feel like that's kind of the conclusion that the documentary is trying to come to.
I think it's the opposite of the conclusion it comes to, because he literally lands on the fact that we need to imagine a new future. Like,
yeah.
The entirety of his final thesis is the opposite of that.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying the opposite of that. I'm saying we need to imagine a new future, but we need to do so with humility. We need to do so. I don't think that he's an optimist in that kind of like pony sense. I think he is a realist. And I don't think he's a capitalist realist. I think he's just a realist. And I think he takes a very realist approach to it. Yes, there's hope. We need to imagine a new future, but we can't have it steeped in utopian visions.
I don't know that I entirely agree with that point, because I think that what he more or less outlines at the end is like individuals regaining their confidence and envisioning a future. That's utopianism.
That's not utopianism.
No, the utopianism is the vision of a future without a program to get there.
No, that's not the definition of utopianism. He's not saying I know what the future is going to be. He's saying that we need to put heads together. We need to have humility, and we need to do it in a realistic way. That's not just going to end up disappointing and demoralizing people. Like the entire, you know, he excavates like post-Soviet Russia and the sort of nihilism that led to someone like Putin, you know, Chinese state capitalism, and how that demoralized everyone from the students in Tianan Square in the 80s or 90s.
A few times.
I'm talking about the one with the girl who was crying, remember?
Yeah,
90s or 80s. Like people who literally were demoralized, and that demoralization is what created room for the system that we have now, because people who are like neoliberal mm-hmm. politicians in character or whatever, there's this sort of tendency to believe that they're just sort of these nihilistic, cynical actors. But I believe that they truly believe that neoliberalism is the only thing that keeps away the horrors of ideology.
Which in and of itself is an ideology.
It is, it's an individual, it's an invisible ideology. It's an ideology that doesn't make mm-hmm. itself yep. as apparent yep. or as plain. And people view it as the status quo, and people legitimately see the status quo as the only thing, especially those who remember the horrors of the past, they see it as the only thing that stands between them and, you know, the specter of ideology, basically. Yes.
Absolutely.
People like the Tony Blairs of the world, they literally believe that they're doing good by keeping ideology at bay. And most, for the most part, the people who are who benefit from the neoliberal system also want to keep ideology at bay. The only people who are really interested in, quote unquote, the specter of ideology are the ones who are at the margins, the people who are at the fringes of society, the ones who don't benefit from the system as it is now. And what I'm saying is, because Adam Curtis, I listened to a little bit of the teaser of like Red, that he, because he did an interview with Red Scare, and he said this really interesting thing about how the left, during the time when Trump won and during the time of Brexit, how it didn't do anything to actually engage with the concerns of the working people who voted for those things. It just basically screamed at them or retreated into paranoid conspiracy theory or retreated into utopianism, basically, and delusions of grandeur, rather than going to those people and saying, and I mean, Bernie did this a little bit to an extent, but the rest of the sort of body politic of the left, rather than going to the people who voted for Trump and saying, yes, you were right. Your impulses were right. However, this person is trying to swindle you. Let's actually work and build something together, you know?
Yeah.
The actual political project of the left is something that is a, is it, it has contempt for working people, and it's still steeped in the same power seeking, the power seeking as movements of the past, and the the delusional utopianism of the past as well. And that's kind of something that I want to be far away from, because I think it harms people and it creates more disappointment, more demoralization, more pain that then continues to justify the system. The system can step in and sort of fill that void. And I don't want to be somebody who manufactures consent for that.
I guess kind of my criticisms of this documentary, and I think that the positives of it far outweigh these, but I feel a lot of the time like, A, it kind of focuses on individuals and kind of like, it does this for storytelling purposes, and I understand why it does this, but I also think it runs the risk a little bit of kind of indulging the same dynamics it's criticizing by, like, a lot of the time ideas are really centered on, like, an individual as opposed to, like, the movement behind it, which would ultimately adopt it. But then the other issue I have with it is it has kind of a passive voice and an observational tone. It's very specifically like he does not want to indulge the sort of nihilism, and he doesn't want to indulge the sort of hatred that he had, that like a lot of these people have for working people, quote unquote, voting against their own interests. Like there was a section in this documentary where he talked about that specifically. I think that it kind of accidentally sometimes comes off to me as a little nihilistic, just because it doesn't really have like a direction sometimes. I feel like a lot of the time it's sort of prompting us to have the direction, and I get that, but I also, I don't know, there's some incongruity in my opinion there.
That is the conclusion of it as well, is and the position of it even, and the fact that it's about, you know, for storytelling purposes, I think storytelling as a topic is kind of part of the themes of his of his documentaries, of the stories that we tell each other as human beings that we can get motivated behind and all of this kind of thing. And I see it more of like a really grounded down-to-earth vision of what Alan Moore talks about a lot, of like we're sort of, you know, completely drained and, you know, creatively fucking stuck in all of these in the 21st century and completely bogged down by the stuff that's eating up all of our energy, which is like fucking, you know, being taken up in these revolutionary causes that doesn't actually fucking go anywhere. And and we need to imagine new things. There's whole, like, if you've read Jerusalem or you see any of his recent talks about anything, all Alan Moore talks about is fucking new ideas, new creativity, new stuff. And I think that this is kind of the point that Adam Curtis is coming to with his documentary, is that the sort of, you know, we live in a fucking world of revamps and reboots and soft reboots and fucking it's coming back again. And I think to sort of take the specter of those things of the past that have left such deep scars and just to try and reboot them is not going to be feasible. And that imagining a new thing and imagining a new future is the way to go. And the way he sort of tells the story of the 20th century as an observer, then sort of that's putting you in the seat of the observer for you to then go, you've observed this now. What's your story? Mm-hmm. What's the story that you can imagine from this? Or what's the story that you want to imagine mm-hmm. for humanity after seeing this?
I also think that it's important to have that kind of perspective that's not necessarily posing or at least being explicitly ideological, because those of us who do have some form of ideology are then forced to self-reflect. It's a exercise in humility and in an understanding of yourself as an individual, yes, but one that is acted upon by economic and historical forces constantly at mm-hmm. all times. It's not that we don't live in just the present. We came from a past and we have responsibility like for a future. And I feel like his somewhat objective stance is something that's valuable for people to think about. I think that it's more valuable than a lot of what you see coming from the fucking left, for sure. I mean, he identifies as a quote unquote progressive. He doesn't have he's not somebody who has radical politics, and I don't think he ever will. And I don't think he needs to.
He doesn't need to. No. I think, again, the point here that is the most important thing, again, like to come back to it, is the historicizing of all of this.
Yeah.
Like, it, regardless of tone, regardless of any aspect I feel like I could criticize here, I also... there's no way I can get around not recommending it. Like, I would never not recommend it, because there's so much information here that is so incredibly important. I'm going to go ahead and say, like, I believe very specifically in the idea that we cannot continue the system that we are in. That is always, like, I probably will have radical politics until I'm dead. And if he doesn't, that's okay. I don't have a problem with people that don't have radical politics. My feeling is that whether you have radical politics or not, it does not matter what your goal is. You need that history. You need this information. You cannot.
Definitely.
You can't get around that.
I think, like, as we were sort of joking at the start of the episode, that the Tiger King was obviously so captivating for pretty much the whole world. Mm-hmm. I feel like mm-hmm. this is captivating anybody that is remotely interested in any of this stuff in exactly the same way. Like, it is so... spot on. I don't personally have any fucking critiques of the documentary at all. I enjoyed every minute of it. I think that obviously it would wander a little bit sometimes, but I think he was pretty on point with a lot of the stuff that he was talking about and illustrating, and the way he depicted a lot of the historical sort of, you know, how it kind of went down. Definitely.
I do have radical politics, but I'm also humble enough to know that I don't have all the mm-hmm. answers. And that's specifically what I kind of gleaned on from the documentary, is the fact that these sorts of things, especially when you're talking about these large ideologies and these historical forces, have to be approached with an element of humility and caution, especially because mm-hmm. you're dealing with people's hope. Like, the documentary really kind of made it plain what happens when the loss of hope occurs, and how that vacuum ends up being filled by more pernicious elements of the system. And we've now had two massive historical losses for the sort of broad left, with Bernie, which was a huge betrayal, obviously, because all the energy ended up getting funneled back into the DNC. He ended up manufacturing mm-hmm. consent for them. It was a massive upward transfer of wealth from working people as well. All these things just cause and compound disillusionment. And then he ended up being a show pony that was a whipping boy for them. You know, all these things just like...
He ended up being a mitten cow.
Yeah, basically.
they were milking him for mittens.
Yeah, milking him for mittens. Like, all these things compound nihilism, all these things compound disappointment when you play around with people's hope and you sell people mm-hmm. utopian visions. Like, look at fucking Bread mm-hmm. Tube, for the fuck's sake. Like, I was like, how old was I? I was like fucking 23 years old. Hopeful, wide-eyed, bright little kid or whatever. You know, true believer. And, you know, you have a lot of people pouring money into this project, thinking that, you know, it's going to be this big transformative thing, that it's this force for society. And then they end up getting their hopes disillusioned when it ends up just manufacturing consent for the DNC and creating a class of like narcissistic media fucking millionaires. You're playing with people's hope. So that when you have radical politics, or when you say you have radical politics, you have to scrutinize everything ruthlessly. And you also have to be humble enough to understand that you don't have all the answers, and that you're just one dot in a bunch of like historical forces, like an entire confluence of like historical forces. And I feel like part of the reason why a lot of radical movements fail is because that humility just like isn't there. And that was a massive part of what I globbed on from in the documentary, in his examination of all of these different movements.
This is the one thing that resonated with me as well with his documentary, was the lack of any real belief anybody has in anything anymore.
Well, why and
no, but that's the point. As much as you don't want to, you know, sell someone a utopian dream, you've also kind of got to give someone something to believe in, I think.
No, I understand that,
but there's got it comes down to his whole sort of shared a shared goal or a shared something for you, for the people of whatever. For China it was fucking something, for Russia it was something else, you know what I mean? Like there was this shared goal, whereas like and as much as that maybe
maybe it can't be utopian,
but there does need to be something that people believe in other than celebrity and themselves and money.
Absolutely, because that's
all people care about now. And you need
because
to
there's
kind
nothing
of,
else.
No, but I mean, it's up. Exactly. It's still up to us to imagine something better, and we believe in that. You
but
know,
it can't like be haphazard. And I'm not really in line or like believing anyone who's proposing quick solutions. It can't be haphazard, and especially off the back of something as gutting and as disappointing as the Bernie movement, and especially off the back of something as gutting as disappointing as the historical defeat of like, you know, the socialist wing of the Labour Party with Jeremy Corbyn. But I don't want anyone who's trying to sort of herd that those sort of disaffected people and into like a little like milieu and sell them like an even more haphazard utopian vision. This is the time to think. This is the time to have conversations. This is the time to excavate, you know, subversive knowledge. This is the time to really be open to each other and to ideas and to exploration and to the truth and to ruthlessly examine reality as it is. And I feel like a lot of people who are clouded by utopianism are unable to ruthlessly examine reality as it is. And that being out of touch with reality is what prevents you from being able to transform it. In order to transform it, you have to be fully in touch with it, and you have to be able to face it. And a lot of these kind of like socialism comrades, DSA, organized people are not in touch with reality. They're not in touch with reality. They're just selling utopian vision.
They don't want you to clap.
Yeah.
That's been doing the rounds again. Have you seen? Apparently, I think someone...
Of course it has, because it's fucking insane. Anytime anyone wants to discredit the quote-unquote left, all they have to do is bring that fucking video up.
Dude,
point
of
privilege!
What it is.
Point of privilege!
But that's what it is. And there is nothing, at least in America and in the UK right now, that is a left. There is nothing like that. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist.
Absolutely.
There's nothing. And even if you're radicalizing people, like, what the fuck are you pointing them to? We have to face reality. What are you mobilizing people for? What is there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality that we're facing. And that's what this documentary brought into stark relief for me. There is nothing as of this moment right now. And if we're going to do the work of making something happen, well, at least let's get grounded and in touch with reality again. Let's be able to have an environment where we can actually have conversations with people without being called Nazis and fucking bullshit class reductionists or whatever the fuck. We can't do the work of excavating and doing the intellectual labor of figuring out what future we're going to enter right now as things are, because there is no fucking left. It doesn't exist. It just doesn't fucking exist.
It does, but there's so many problems. This point of privilege is everywhere. We need to stop people clapping. Can you not shift around so much with your eyes? It makes me very anxious.
But seriously.
Please do jazz hands.
Seriously.
Please
and do I don't buy hands. It. I don't buy the idea that it's going to take some like big brain Marxist from on high to fix the problems and demystify it for everyone. It's not going to work that way. It has to start within proletariat aims and aspirations, or it's not fucking real. Or it's not fucking real. Or and we people need to be a lot more humble about their limitations and their function. Mm-hmm. People need to be a lot more fucking humble. And my limitations are broad. I'm one person. My function is to fucking think about things, excavate the truth, and try to have an analysis that allows me and other people to see reality for what it actually is, to tell the truth. That's my function. That's my thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to sell people a utopian vision, even though that shit is profitable as fuck. If you say luxury space, gay communism, comrades, organize, you say the magic words, unite the working class, then it will happen.
I want to live in Star Trek. Why don't I live in Star Trek yet?
God.
Well, I think thinking how we can come out of this individualist sort of like fucking mindset as humanity at large is like the first step, because you can't have a shared vision if you only fucking care about what you care about for the day.
And like, again, the absolute key for this is history.
Yeah.
It's history. That's the world. That's like, as far as humans can perceive the physical world, history is it. That's how it works. If we don't have that, we don't have a shared reality. And what we had prior to what we have now, things like religion, that was what binded things together, because we had these sort of religious histories that filled in the blanks and gave us context for our lives. We don't have that anymore because, frankly, it's kind of silly. But we didn't replace it with anything.
No, but because historicization is something that doesn't work for the neoliberal paradigm. We have to live in an eternal present.
Exactly. It's the end of history.
Yeah, it's the end of history.
We can't be doing history. We figure that shit out. Trust the process, man.
Most of the people who are like the PMC class that are sort of the face of the left are people who come from academia. And academia is poisoned by this kind of deterritorializing, post-structural, kind of postmodern mentality. We only live in the present. There's no such thing as a historical through line. And like you said, it stops us from being able to have any sort of sense of shared reality. And also understanding that what you do now affects the future, mm-hmm. and what happened in the past also affects where we're at now. There's something very humbling about understanding that. And if you understand that, then you're not going to make a quick haphazard, utopian visions that are going to end up disappointing and demoralizing people further. You're not going to do that to humanity. You're not going to take that unction upon yourself. And I feel like that humility is incredibly lacking with people who call themselves the left.
There's no space for that on the left, because everyone immediately assumes that they're morally correct and morally superior. So anything that you say is not as good as what they have to say. That it's not as caring for other people. It's not fucking whatever. So like,
you know, they should be fucking embarrassed that bog standard liberals are fucking are showing them their asses like this. Like radicalism, schmadicalism, for fuck's sake. Get your head out of your fucking ass and enter reality with the rest of us, for fuck's sake. Enter reality with the rest of us. And yeah, this documentary definitely was a humbling experience, because all of those little niggly, even though I've been sort of bathing myself out of this whole thing, all of those little niggly residual aspects of it were sort of destroyed by this documentary. And actually looking at the historicization of our current moment and looking at the responsibility that I have towards the future. And I was like, no, I'm not going to try to sell people some utopian vision. I'm not going to try and rally the disaffected like Bernie people and try and sell them some other useless like half thought out vision like the rest of the media are, in order to continuously justify their position. That's what people are doing. They're trying to justify their position, and in order to justify their utility, they're basically saying, well, hey, I have an idea. No, you don't. None of us do. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's we're facing problems in the 21st century that are unprecedented, that we need to figure out, like fucking surveillance capitalism, for fuck's sake, and all of the fucking technologies that are now at the disposal of the system in order to create a more technocratic, controlled consumerist state. That's a problem that we've never faced as a species before. And I sure as hell don't fucking have the answers for that shit. I don't know. All I can do is continue to excavate reality and try to see it as clearly as possible and try to help others see it as clearly as possible and to take feedback from others so that I can continuously evaluate and excavate my paradigm so that I can make sure that I'm seeing things clearly. And the fact that bog standard liberals are handing the so-called radicals their ass in this way makes me laugh. It makes me fucking laugh.
Maybe, you know, Adam Curtis, you know, is a psyop and he has made this documentary to make you think like that. So you don't rally all the, you know, crazy radicals together and make a revolution.
Well, I make Chaz and turn the fucking planet into fucking Chaz. No, thank you. I don't want to get hepatitis. Like, I'm good. I'm good. That's their fucking view of you. That's what they imagine for the future is fucking Chaz.
I mean, we could talk about anarchism for a while if we really wanted to.
No, please don't.
But I mean, that's if you take as what people have voted and the, you know, sitting president of the United States is what you know, people believe in America, they largely believe in no fundamental change, which is fucking sad. Like, that's, it's either like you believe in something new and different and fairer for people, or you believe that what's going on right now is just fucking chill and it should just continue, which that to me is unthinkable. But you know, I'm not in your fucking reality, so
my belief is that that is what becoming an adult is in the United States. It's a sort of embedded defeatism. You as a teenager like have some idea of like what you would love to do with your life, and you've been told your entire life that you will be able to accomplish that. And the process of growing up, because you aren't actually given the means to self-actualize to become an adult in the United States. Instead, the process of growing up is attaining a quote-unquote rational defeatism.
It's true. And that, can you blame people for feeling defeated? Look at the options that they've been presented with. You know, look at what people really, really believed. People believed and they put their hope. Look at how much free labor that we've done because we fucking believed. It's cruel. Selling these utopian visions is cruelty. It's just basically extracting extra labor and belief from working people. Why would you want to do that to people? Look at all the money that people donated. Look at all the fucking time people gave. Look at all the belief and hope and tears and blood and sweat that people put behind these. It is irresponsible for anybody to endorse anything from this point forward without having really excavated it and critically examined it to a T. That's the point that I'm at.
If Tupac Shakur couldn't bring about a black revolution, then fucking Goldman Sachs backed fucking free profit fucking shit isn't going to do it, is it? Let's be fucking real. Like,
well, you know, it's so like sad, like the state of like, so to go back to when BLM was actually riots and a reaction to a police murder. I mean, that's real, genuine rage. It is a reaction that is justified, and there's a reason that it happened, and it signifies the fact that people were ready for change. And these NGOs came in, and they're companies that are calling themselves Black Lives Matter. Like, do they generate a profit? No, but they bring in tons of money from these huge corporations and they direct all of these people. And through that, you see us go from, you know, we're going to burn down the police station, which, by the way, isn't necessarily the most pertinent and intelligent thing to do. Like, you can criticize that all you want, but it is genuine at very least. But then you see all this stuff diffused through the NGO complex, diffused through this billionaire money, diffused through all of this massive amount of money. And they completely nullify, they recuperate and nullify the sentiment. And it goes from let's burn down the police station to let's defund the police station to I just don't like police violence, man.
During the obviously real process of anger and desire for change and then organizing to mm-hmm. in order to bring about said change, all the whistleblowers who say, no, maybe you shouldn't go in that direction, or maybe you shouldn't take the NGO money, or maybe, you know, we should excavate this thing, are all hung. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to hang reality, which is the reason why I say the movements in totality are not viable. There are going to be a lot of people who are mad at me out there, but anytime someone comes along and is like, hey, this is heading in a bad direction, they're completely bulldozed over in this very kind of scorched earth approach in order to get rid of anyone who is pointing out gaps. Like,
well, it's because they want jobs at those fucking NGOs. Yeah. That's why. Yeah. Like, they frankly, like, of course we need the money from them. I need a job from them.
I would rather that $100 million or whatever the fuck they raised. It was more than that, wasn't it? It was like billions of dollars.
It was over $10 billion the Black Lives Matter NGOs have raised. Why the fuck are those not just being distributed? Like, you talk about reparations in the United States in terms of, like, the government giving out checks. How about that fucking NGO that just raised $10 billion? Divide that amongst the entire adult Black population in the United States tomorrow. You want to know why? Because it's held in capital interests.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather all of that money that went to BLM, like, get sent somewhere where I feel like it could make some sort of institutional opening eyes of power and whatever. Like, send that to someone that can protect Ghislaine Maxwell to go on trial and then pay for a good lawyer and, like, get all those names out of her and get all the address books and get all those fucking people that are doing all that fucking scandalous shit. And then, you know, maybe I think that would do more to adjust power. Than just fucking giving it to Goldman Sachs.
But just the arrogance of these so-called radical movements, the way that they have this sort of disdain for working people, their time, their money, their hope, the fact that you're playing mm-hmm. around with people's hope, number one, and also the fact that when they're confronted with realities that they don't like Trump or Brexit or whatever the fuck, they will either retreat further into utopianism or into delusional conspiratorial thinking or into just outright hatred and disdain for the majority of people out there. You can't call that mm-hmm. left. You can't call that fucking radical. And you can't call that anything that's interested in the aims or benefits for working class people. Especially the arrogance, these people, these fucking people who know nothing, who aren't even socially embedded, number one. Mainly people mm-hmm. who are not even socially embedded, have probably never worked a day in their life in any sort of actual like job or anything that entails them to interact with people, who are selling utopian visions for profit. There's no understanding of one's limitations. It's all about putting together these haphazard things and then funneling all of that potential and turning around and shitting on the people who fucking worked hard to get you there. Look at the squat. Look at it. There, I can point to a million examples of this shit. And you expect people to be like, oh yeah, sure, I'm going to give you the time of day. I'm on board. I'm going to waste my time and my energy and my money and my hope. No.
Well, I'm like, you know, isn't it radical if there was no cops? I'm like, it would be more radical if there was no rent, if I'm honest. Yeah. Like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Like, if frankly that you care about abolishing police forces, and I hope that you do, because that is an endgame. Abolishing rent is a much more serious proposition in terms of getting to that point. You literally have to fix everything before that apparatus withers away. It doesn't, like, you have to resolve the contradictions between the ruling class and the working class. If you don't do that, like, the state apparatus, the police force, special bodies of armed men, that will persist until all of those contradictions are resolved, until rent is gone, until we aren't worried about who owns the means of production, until that stuff. Like, the idea that you can abolish the police or any individual issue as long as there is some form of inequality that is systemically embedded. How do people think that, like, when they say, well, we need to get rid of white supremacy, what the fuck do you even think white supremacy is? Do you think that it is, like, a bunch of people who have bad opinions? Because you're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
It is a system that is built through historical sequences of events. And again, this goes back to exactly why this whole fucking documentary matters so goddamn much. It doesn't fucking matter how radical Adam Curtis is. It doesn't fucking matter what his opinion on revolution is. It doesn't matter. And none of that shit matters. What matters is that there's a historical account given. There's information here that we're able to analyze and come to conclusions with.
Definitely. I mean, even if that money was all raised by, you know, private whatevers and it went through this NGO thing, and then it ended up with something radical happening with them like buying New Orleans or like buying a state and making a whole fucking country and run of it and doing something different and not having police or fuck, do you know what I mean? Just like make it, do a radical fucking choice of it. Then you got fucking money to do it. What are you gonna do with $10 billion fucking dollars? Like you got the chance to do something really radical there. And if even if it all came and amalgamated through the bad fucking ways, and then it ended up with doing something that was even just remotely interesting to watch and see how the fucking experiment went, that I would still be more fucking like, oh yeah, that's cool, than just like the whole fucking situation.
It's in order to further, it's there to further like entrench people into nihilism and hopelessness so that they can continue to justify their fucking position and continue to sort of drum up new visions to sell people. And like, you know, I'm not about that. And I'm not in support of that at all.
The money comes in based on promises. That's the real problem. These NGO people, they don't want to do something radical. They want to do what Angie is saying. They want to cultivate these demographics of people that they can activate. And it's not just left-wing ones, frankly. The right-wing ones, the whole Capitol riot, the coup, as they call it, is a bunch of people that were bussed in by right-wing NGOs. Like, they're just creating political spectacle. And to think that the left-wing ones are somehow doing something that's revolutionary or have the goal of doing something that's revolutionary, it's ignoring the fact that all of that money comes in from like Warren Buffett or his son or all these people with the intention of creating like conscious capitalism. Like that's where the money's coming from. It's coming from that sentiment. It's not coming from like we need to abolish capitalism. That they don't want that.
Yeah, that's the thing though. It's kind of a catch 22 at the end of the day, because you know, it's not just the NGO industrial complex. It's also the so-called politicians that, you know, fly the banner of socialism. It's also the radical movements. It's also the fucking media pundits. It's everything that sort of amalgamates and masquerades itself as the left right now. And
it's why it's important to understand that the left as a movement or as a colloquial term, it has departed from the definitional left. To understand that the left is not what, when you look in a book and see the definition of leftism or communism or socialism, you have to understand that it has departed that. It is no longer that.
But even
that is not
the,
what the left is.
Even the true Scotsman, quote unquote, doesn't exist.
That's the point. We have to understand that when you say the left in modern context, you are not saying the definitional left. You cannot do that.
When people think about the left, they think about Black Lives Matter, Me Too. They think about AOC. They think about Bernie Sanders. They think about the Squad. When the average person thinks about the left, that's what comes to mind. And that's something that we have to actually grapple with and not just be like, well, that's not the real left. Because if there was a real left, then we wouldn't have to have the fucking argument, because the real left would be doing what the real left is supposed to fucking do.
Yeah.
And the fact is, there is no real left. So in the place of what would be a real left is this. This is what the left is. It's what it is.
Definitely. I think it goes back to Adam Curtis's, you know, point of the documentary is we have to imagine something new for us to fucking, you know, get involved in and believe in, because it's not this at the moment, and it's not fucking, and you're right, Angie, like when you say the left, people think of the fucking mouth breathers at the DSA. They don't, do you know what I mean? They don't. And you'll then have, you know, Joe Rogan or even, what's it, Tom Segura on Your Mama's House rip in to socialism and socialists like this. And then people that are the true Scotsman left people have so much of their identity and ego attached to socialism or the idea of communism that then it spurs an angry reaction. This is not what the left is. No true Scotsman would ever fucking point of privilege, blah, 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 blah. Like, then you just start in the whole fucking cycle of bullshit on social media. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, then you're arguing, like, you end up arguing with people who are like, we need to get the class reductionist out. And then you're like, no, yeah, class reductionist is bullshit. That's fucking bullshit. Like, so the amount of things that you have to literally be like, that's fucking bullshit. That's fucking bullshit.
I don't give a fuck. I don't care. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about any of that shit anymore. I care about having conversations with people. I care about excavating truth. And I care about attempting myself to see reality as clearly as possible and helping other people see reality as clearly as possible. Because unless you see reality clearly, you can't transform it.
Absolutely.
It's an impediment to the transformation of reality if you're under this malaise of, you know, haphazard ideology. And that's precisely what it is. It's haphazard ideology for most people.
And then very specifically, too, we need to be able to stop thinking in terms of pure individualist. This is like, we can't think that way anymore. If we're talking about making some form of change that recognizes the historical moment we're in, as well as the contradictions of the society we live in, it just, like, the viewpoint described in this 6-part series, it just cannot, it can't be present in what we're doing.
The series actually explores the tension between the individual and the collective as well, and the limitations of individualism, as well as the limitations of collectivism. And I think that that's kind of a thing that we need to actually think about and troubleshoot and have conversations about. And that's the sort of stuff that I'm interested in having conversations about. Like, I come from an African culture, which is more collectivist. We're still socially embedded. We still live in extended kinship networks. So there's a collective kind of mentality around the way that we view things. And that has its benefits in terms of social embeddedness, community, the fact that my mom raised me as a single mom and had sisters who could also take care of me and grandma and all of these different things. But then it also has its stringent limitations because, as they say, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down. There's a lot of expectations of you to kind of remain among the rules and the traditions and all of those things. So there are those limitations. But then also I was raised in a Western individual context as well, where the idea of exploring one's internal identity and making yourself, you know, your footprint on the world is also part of it. And there are benefits to that, but there are also limitations to that as well, because you can end up making decisions unembedded from other people that cause you to have consequences that you have to then face on your own without support. Mm-hmm. That is something that I found very interesting. And I think it's definitely the sort of question that whatever political movement arises in the future is going to have to grapple with, the limitations of individualism and the limitations of collectivity. But I'm here to plant seeds, and I may not be around to see the fucking seeds grow. I may not be alive in the 200 years to see the seed. I don't know. I have no control over what those seeds are going to grow into. I'm not arrogant enough to think that I can be the planter harvester and eat the meal too. Okay, we're here to plant seeds and tell truth and excavate ideas and hopefully inspire people to think differently about certain things. But when it comes to trying to sell some kind of utopian vision to people, I'm not in that game. And I feel like a lot of people, now that the Bernie movement is over and, you know, the liberal left has kind of ceased to be useful and, you know, the sort of very kind of hard liberal consensus is kind of asserting itself right now, there's this crisis of faith going on. And I think this documentary really kind of pushes into that crisis of faith going on. People are sort of, you know, looking for hope and haphazard solutions wherever they can find it. And yeah, a lot of people are selling people utopianism, are trying to funnel the energy of working people into stuff that either only serves the aims of amalgamating more power and influence for people, or that end up going nowhere, or that end up fucking funneling shit back into the DNC. And like, we don't have to do that. There's no need to try and pretend as if we have any sort of solution to pose. But I have a brain, and you have a brain, and Jake has a brain, and we have time to think and talk and excavate and talk to people, rather than trying to put together some kind of haphazard solution to sell people for legitimacy. Like, I find it abhorrent that people do that. Like, I find it disgusting.
It's self-help. Yeah. It's just the self-help industry in a different mask.
A therapeutic kind of politic, basically, for a specific class. Yeah. And like, no, no, fuck that shit. And yeah, I highly recommend seeing the documentary if you haven't already. It was a very humbling kind of meditative experience. for me.
It's only slightly longer than the Snyder Cut of Justice League, and I think it's way more worth your time. So get involved.
Wait, there's a Snyder Cut. Snyder Cut of Justice.
Oh my God, you're out of the loop, aren't you? Dude, that's like what everyone's been waiting for. That's a DC fanboy. They're all waiting for Zack Snyder to come and save fucking DC superheroes with his fucking vision for this Justice League film that got absolutely slated like 2 or 3 years ago, whenever the fuck it came out.
No one needs that. The same way we don't need to rehash and repackage old visions. We need new visions. And yeah, definitely check out the documentary series. And think, talk to people, excavate things. Don't buy anything that's haphazard. You know, trust your impulses, trust your instincts, trust your intuition, and ruthlessly scrutinize everything. And like, I know it's not really profitable for me to tell you that, but I believe that to be the truth. So yeah.
The humbleness,
yes,
is important.
Yes. The humility.
But I also want to give us a little bit of credit on one very specific thing.
Oh, here we go.
You and I have been asked the question through the years so many times, could you please outline what socialism would look like?
Oh, yeah.
And you and I, we have resisted answering that question.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of trusting our instincts, I feel like that's the kind of thing that we need to be doing in the future. And it's not to toot our horn or anything like that, but it's so important to not, like, as an individual, put forward this, as you've been saying, utopian vision of what society could look like.
Yeah.
It's just not feasible. Like, in terms of what happens in the future, we can set some goals, but in what we really need to be outlining is not this utopian vision, but rather having a criticism of things where they are today, having an understanding of how they got to this point, identifying the contradictions in society, putting forward an actual program for resolving those contradictions, and actually bringing people together to do it.
Exactly. Having humility, but also having principles and having a fucking backbone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, if people like had principles and a fucking backbone, half the shit that went wrong wouldn't have fucking gone wrong. Like, you know, and I feel like having a clear vision of the truth of objective reality, having principles, having a backbone, and also having humility is what's going to lead us into the uncertainty of what we're facing in the 21st century as people who are political people, who are interested in politics, and who are interested in establishing a better future. And that's what I say when people ask me what I am. I'm someone who's interested in trying to fight for a better future.
I'm interested in helping all of the alienated young men out there.
And women, whose names are Angie. but yeah, it gave me a lot of food for thought, for sure. And it came at the right time, I think, like the beginning of the year, where everyone's sort of reevaluating things and reestablishing ethos and stuff. But yeah, we highly recommend it.
Speaking of high level ideas, though, our parasocial patrons.
Oh no, we do have some parasocial questions.
Nice.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so hang on.
Hey, Angie, Peter, and Jake the Snake. Thank y'all so much for what y'all do. It has been a relief to hear y'all's thoughts and perspectives over the last year, and especially now in this year.
I love this person.
My question is one of building working class solidarity. What are your thoughts about targeting and building solidarity with libertarian identified people? My experience in Texas with libertarian identified people tend to be way more open to materialist conversations with me than, say, my liberal friends in Dallas, who are far more invested in political fandom. Thanks again. I hope you'll have a good one.
It's really funny that this question comes at the end of this episode, because it's something that, like, we've literally just been talking about. But one thing I want to agree with for sure is the fact that it's way easier to get, like, libertarians and apolitical people and even right-wing people to an extent on board with some form of material analysis than it is with liberals. Like, that's something that I definitely, like, agree with. But when it comes to creating solidarity among working class people, I don't even like the phrasing, because it sounds like it's this big effort. it just is talking to people. You're talking to people. That's literally all it is. It's just talking to people and being receptive, humble, and having an open mind. And while also like being able to effectively communicate your own principles. That's really all it boils down to. Because this terminology of talking to working class people kind of gives me, it gives me Radlib vibes, if you know what I mean. It's this sort of complication and mystification of something that's like a everyday thing that you do all the time anyway.
Absolutely. And the big thing that it comes down to, I would say, is they've trained everybody to sort of talk about quote unquote working class people as like an other, like not as us, not as a thing that we're part of. But we are a part of, like, we absolutely are a part of that. Like, we're not Jeff Bezos. We're not fucking Bill Gates. And yet somehow we're supposed to talk about working people like as a separate entity from us. And I think that that's probably the most important thing to really excavate out of there. Like, how do we talk to working class people? You are a working class person.
Yeah. If we're talking about like cross ideology as well, because you talked about libertarians and all kinds of other people. Cross ideology is something that's very important because ideology doesn't fucking matter. It's fantasy. It's what is reality is the problems that we have facing us. And everybody who doesn't benefit from the neoliberal system is faced by the same fucking problems. Being able to talk to and take action on areas of agreement is something that is incredibly valuable and necessary if we're going to face any of the problems that we have coming forward in, you know, the 21st century. You have to be able to talk to people. And unfortunately, you know, the liberals, especially the ones in the media and, you know, the ones who are of a certain class, benefit from the system, which is the reason why it's impossible to talk to them about any sort of class-based analysis.
Most of them don't want to listen. That's the truth. And as much as it's simple as you got to just talk to people, it's also finding people that you can actually dialogue with and that are there to listen to your principles.
Absolutely.
And actually have something to say in return. If all you've got is you're saying your principles after they've kind of given you a spiel and they go, yeah, 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 but no, this. And you're just like, well, I mean, you didn't really, you know, this is a conversation here. So you can't just like ignore everything I've said and then just like push forward with this same fucking bullshit that you just said like 2 seconds ago, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel like that's the conversation you end up having with a lot of liberals a lot of the time. And like, so I'm not going to say your full name, but I love your Gmail handle. So T-Bro, thank you so much for that submission there and being a Parasocial patron. Yep. It's fantastic. You're the first one on the show. So congratulations for that. And also it's lovely to hear in your message here that we inspired you to start your own podcast. And I definitely feel obliged to give you a little shout out on there. So definitely go and check out Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. It covers psychology topics and has a focus on open access scholarship. That sounds fantastic, and I'll definitely be checking out your podcast as well, T-Bro. Thank you very much for sending in your question.
Thank you for saying nice things about my work. I really appreciate that. That makes me feel really happy.
I it's very hard for me to say this because I don't know. I don't really want to be like an example or anything, but the idea that like seeing other people do something inspired you to do something yourself, I just think that's great. I think it's wonderful. Like, I don't view us as like professional podcasters or brilliant or anything like that. And that's kind of what the reason why it matters to me, because I think that in terms of like podcasts, we come off pretty like normal in terms of like, we don't come off as like these expert influencers or anything. At least I think we don't. When I listen to it back, I'm like, this sounds like something I would actually hear somebody say, which is nice.
Why it's called No Society.
I mean, if I've come across as an influencer to anybody, you need to get your fucking ears checked. Let's be real.
I thought I was trying to sound like a fancy I'm offended by these remarks. I'm joking. But yeah, that's part of the ethos. It's why we're called Low Society, because it's just kind of like buddies like at a table talking and, you know, trying the best to find truth. And that's what we're all doing.
Yeah, just trying to get to the bottom of some shit.
Yeah, trying to get to the bottom of some fucking shit.
It's been so much fucking shit. Yeah. And it makes me happy that somebody heard that and was like, I also want to do that. Like, fuck yes.
That's part of...
Because we're not...
That's part of the amalgamation of what needs to be happening right now. And that makes me happy that that is sort of already starting to happen. And I feel like It may not be glamorous as a utopian vision, but it's something that's sustainable and something that will lead to good things in the future. And I feel like more people should take this line. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I believe SoundCloud has a place for people to leave comments, or you can comment to us on Twitter. Let us know what you think about it. Let us know what your opinions are.
Or write us a question at lowsocietypodcast@gmail.com.
Also, don't forget to become a patron for access to the Discord, for bonus episodes, etc. We are now on Audible. Follow us there. Leave us 5-star reviews. None of that 4-star bullshit. As you should be doing at Apple Music. Follow us on Spotify. Tell your friends. Seriously, tell them.
Well, much love from us. We shall catch you later. Goodbye.
Peace out. Bye.